bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Bicycle Talk, episode 448, to be broadcast Wednesday, July 23rd. If that's correct, that would be tomorrow, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. I'm running a day late, just trying to stay up on my medical situation, and also it's been busy. Anyway, we will talk more about that in the show. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can comment right down here below if you're listening on live Facebook, or you can send me an email if you're listening to this in an audio file at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week, another bump in the road. Episode 2 last week was my first time back after 3 weeks because I had a major surgery done on my neck. No, it wasn't a bicycle accident. No, it wasn't from past bicycle accidents. It has nothing to do with bikes whatsoever. It's my mom. My mom did this to me. That's it. You got to blame it on your parents, right? As many doctors have told me over the years, as I get older and things start showing up in my life, like 4 years ago, open heart surgery. That was my dad, by the way. A little bit on my mom's side of the family, a lot on my dad's side of the family. But anyway, you know, these things happen. It's what it is. And, you know, we move forward. I clued everyone in last week about the fact that I had severe cervical stenosis. Every single cervical piece of my neck and my spine was just a mess. Full of arthritis, big time problem. If you see me reaching back behind my head, it's because things are a lot happier in the muscles back there when I relieve them by just taking a little pressure off of them. So if I wiggle around here a little bit on the screen, on the Facebook live screen, that's what's going on there. Yeah, I had a problem occurring where I was losing all sorts of power on my bike. I couldn't climb a hill to save myself. I couldn't climb the stairs of my house to save myself. And I did talk about this last week, so I won't get in too deep of a detail because I know I did that a lot last week. But I would like to tell you what a difference a week makes. Again, it is another bump in the road, episode 2. After the pain. Well, the pain's still here, and obviously it is going to be here if they cut away all the muscles behind your neck to be able to perform the surgery. And that's exactly what they did. But I'm starting to get better at managing it and learning my icing techniques a little better. I now put an ice pack right in between the cervical brace and also my neck itself, and that has made a huge difference as far as how I feel. So yes, there is ice back there right now, but you know, then I can sit upright. And there's so much more to talk about, and we will get to that in a second. I am getting better at this. That's what it is. That's my rant of the week because, you know, I can't think of anything else to complain about other than my neck. Of course, there's a ton of things to complain about. There's all sorts of things going on. The current administration has pulled all transportation funds all over the place, which basically means they have pulled all the bicycle fundings for all the new bike routes and bicycle lanes and protective lanes and all that. All that funding money is getting pulled. Call your local representatives, call your state representatives, call your congressmen, yell, scream, shout out, explain to them what it's all about to have more bicycles on the road and how much safer it is to do it that way. Because this is horrendous what's going on right now. It's just terrible. Good news is the midterms are coming. You know, maybe some changes will take place. Maybe some things will happen. It'll make things a whole lot easier for all of us. But anyway, that's what I'm going to stop ranting now and go right on to the positive side. Are you watching the Tour de France? Please tell me you're watching the Tour de France. If you're laid up like I am right now, you're watching it every day, because what else have you got to do but lay around and watch the Tour de France? So I am, and it's been fabulous. I occasionally have friends come by the house, and they will, they'll, you know, say, hey, you're watching the Tour today? And I go, yeah, come on over. And, you know, they join me. So it ensures that I'm going to get visits, which is really nice. And, you know, we can just talk bike racing. And it's just so much fun. I will do highlights of that later on in the show and talk about that a little bit later. Are these guys fast or what? Are they fast? Are you kidding me? It's unbelievable how fast they are. I am just blown away with the speed at which the riders are riding at right now. Yesterday's stage, was it yesterday? No, today's stage. I'm not going to give you a today's stage. I'll give that to you next week when we do the recap on the Tour de France. But I will tell you that they arrived 15 minutes ahead of expected time. It's insane. And it was Mount Ventoux today, just so you know. Okay, that's it. That's all the spoiler alert. That's it. We'll talk about that one next week. But I'm going to go over some of the highlights on some of the other things that I'm seeing that are rather interesting in the Tour, and some of the big days and who's in the lead and why. And hopefully I can recap it enough to make it sound fairly decent for those of you who are interested in learning more about the Tour de France. If you're not, well, you know, maybe this isn't your episode. But hey, that's it. I'm a bike geek. What can I say? I'm 39 years old with 31 years worth of experience. I raced my bike for 10 years. I'm in love with bicycle racing. I watch it nonstop. It's most fascinating sport I've ever watched. And I know there's others out there that will argue with me about that, but that's okay. We're all entitled to our opinions, and this show is all about opinions. That's what it is. So it's, you know, it's amazing. It's just been fabulous. It really has been fabulous. So if you're watching the Tour, I hope you're watching along with me. And it's like I said, it's all just amazing and fabulous. Well, it's the other positive side. The Quiet Corner Bicycle Tour is this weekend. Yeah, no, it's not a race. Just because it says Tour and you hear Tour de France. No. No, it's a bike ride through the beautiful northeastern Connecticut, put on by my local club, the Thread City Cyclers, out of the Mansfield-Willimantic area. It's Quiet Corner. It's called the Quiet Corner for a reason. Shh, don't tell anyone unless they own a bike. If you own a bicycle, come on up to the Quiet Corner. I got to show you some roads that you will not believe. I will probably be helping man at least one of the rest stops this weekend because I have enough mobility to do that. I just can't lift anything heavy. But I do plan on being there. So if you are coming out to the Quiet Corner, I'd love to see you. Our club would love to see you. It's our big fundraiser ride of the year. And it's going to be great. It always is. It's just it's a beautiful place to ride a bike. That's all I can tell you. We'll go over the highlights on that later on in the show. The Neck Chronicles. That's on my positive side. I'll tell you why it's on my positive side, because there's a couple of things going on here. First of all, learning the proper application. I knew I was supposed to be icing, and I knew how I was supposed to do it, but I have invented better ways of doing it every single day, and now I've really got it down to a science, so I'm able to really perform miracles on the muscles behind my neck, because they're a mess right now and they're inflamed all the time, and ice is nothing. There's nothing better than ice for inflammation. I have pretty much removed myself from all pharmaceuticals and even like Tylenol and muscle relaxers, not doing those anymore either. So my change has been very much improving in just the last week. And, you know, my friend Jim said to me he had major surgery on his neck from a car accident years ago. And he told me it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt real bad. And he said, all I can tell you is it does get better. And I may have mentioned this on last week's show, but he went on after having his done within the year from that point. He went out and ran a marathon. So, you know, there is life after spinal surgery if you find a good surgeon, and we've got great surgeons here, right here at University of Connecticut. And we've got a great medical school and a great hospital, and they're the ones who perform the surgery. And I just have to shout out to them all the time, even though I'm not supposed to promote or endorse things on my show because this is public radio. I will tell you that it's if you're going to have some work done, it's definitely worth giving them a jingle. So anyway, moving on. I have a note in here, and it's the 165. Ron, this is Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tips of the Week. 165 millimeter cranks. Do you really need them? Do you really? Well, I'm gonna try. You know, the guys that are riding on these things are just really, they are small people. I'm a small people. I'm taller than they are, but I'm certainly a small people. And I've always been kind of a high spinner and someone who is turning over, you know, I'm turning my pedals over a little bit faster RPM than a lot of others are. So if you're that type of rider, if you're not a slugger, if you're not someone who pounds big gears and, you know, wants to get the most torque out of those crank arms as you can, that's 165 millimeter crank arm is something you might want to take a look at. And that's why Tadej Pogačar is riding them. That's why I believe Remco Evenepoel's on them. I do believe that also the Jonas Vingegaard is riding on 165s. They're all using them. And if you watch them as they're climbing, they're definitely turning their legs over faster because it's a smaller circle. So there's still some discussion about this, but if you go looking around to try to find a set of 165 millimeter crank arms, guess what? They're real hard to find because it seems like they are all using this. And yeah, let's see. Vingegaard has gone, he uses 160 millimeter crank arms. Got that? 160s. Amazing. Todd Pidcock is riding on 165s. Will shorter cranks help my knees? Longer cranks tend to increase shear forces on the knees, so shorter ones may help those with anterior knee pain. Have any problems with your knees? This is a good thing. You might want to look at it. And, you know, then you go to guys like Mark Cavendish. 101... He's using big 175s, but he is a big sprinter. Matthew Vanderpoel will use 172.5s, which is what I'm currently riding on right now. So that's why I'm ready to make change. I wanna get back down. I wanna drop down. Now 172.5s down to 165 is gonna be a big change, but you know, I got time to find these crank arms and I got time to put them on my bike, and I will give you my own personal information on this once I do that. But it really does come down to what you are dealing with as far as, I mean, there are bike fitters. They talk about if you have an 82 to 85 centimeter inseam, you need 165s, 85 to 89, 170s, 89 to 94, 175 millimeters, over 95 centimeters, 180 if preferred. I could never imagine it. I went to 175s for a short period of time because I've got really long legs and a really short torso, and I thought maybe I should use longer crank arms. And it just killed me. I didn't like it at all. I stuck with them for a month, and then I said, nope, this is not for me. I don't like it. And yeah, you get a little more torque when you're climbing. If you get out of the saddle and really jam, you definitely got a little bit more there. But I can do a lot better seated now than when I'm standing. So I really... I'm a promoter of, you know, the man who spins the fastest is the fastest. Big shout out to my good friend down in New Jersey who has done many clinics and won a number of national championships. Age group right now and 85 plus. So anyway, other story. 165s. It seems to be a thing. It seems to be a trend right now. And they're riding the fastest Tour de France they've ever ridden. Let's do some math here. Let's do some, you know, a little bit of guesstimating as to what's going on. I mean, how come they're riding faster? I think they're riding faster because they're also using lower gears than they used to ride. And, you know, you talk about shorter crank allows a rider to bring your saddle up a little bit higher. A higher saddle can result with a flatter back, thus improving the aerodynamics. But the most likely answer is simply because it's more comfortable. So that's what Tadej Pogačar says. So, you know, that's the short crank story. I'm going to continue to explore it. I'm going to continue to talk about it on the show because I think it's a thing and I'm really excited by it. And I know that there's others out there that are looking at this and looking at the trend. We tend to follow what the pros do. Not that we're pros, but we do tend to follow what they do because they've got a lot of research and they got a lot of background in this. And so, you know, that is the question. You know, there are discussions and forums that are online are really funny. Like, well, I regret going to 165-millimeter cranks. Think about swapping out my stock 175s on my bike for a shorter length. 175s? Didn't I just talk about that? The main turn concern this person has to go into 165s makes climbs excessively difficult. And I do not agree with that. But this bike is a vintage bike, which has a 1x11 drivetrain. It's a 2017 bike. And if you're going to make a jump from 175s, I would go to 170s first and then maybe 165s. But then a lot of comments here. That of people that did go from 175s to 165s and to get the same power output with a shorter lever arm, you're either going to have to apply more force and or spin at a higher cadence in any given gear. But the experience of this rider was you can adapt quickly to spinning faster and it'll feel normal in a couple of weeks. So one thing I will comment on this too is as you spin faster, you are definitely taxing the cardiovascular system a little bit more. You're going to breathe a little harder. You're going to definitely work a little harder until you adapt to it. So that's good if you're already in very good shape and that shouldn't be a problem. But if you're just starting out, you could find this to be a little bit of a struggle. I do believe that, you know, the spinning is just such an incredible difference. A lot of riders are also running with really low gears in the back, and you watch them, the climbing in the professional stage, and they're really turning their legs over fast. And I think the first person that really started showing us about high turnover on the legs was actually Lance Armstrong. I'll give him I'm not going to give him a shout out because I'm not a big fan, but anyway, that's other reasons and we're not going to get into that right now. That part of that opinionated part of the show. But anyway, he could turn the cranks over really fast. Then after doing research on that and finding out what was going on, and I knew some of the other things that were going on with him, but he also had an incredibly high VO2 max. Now, the higher your VO2 max is, means the higher the easier it is for you to be able to process oxygen. When you can process oxygen at the level of 84 as a VO2 max, you can really use your heart and lungs to do a lot of damage to other riders when you're out there, or you can do a lot of benefit to yourself as a rider. So if you ever get an opportunity to get your VO2 max tested, I highly encourage it. I've been tested twice in my lifetime, and I found out that my VO2 max is a little bit above average, which ensured me that I had made the right decision to stay in the bicycle industry, but to stay out of professional bicycle racing. And so I never made it past the category 2 in the amateur range. So, you know, I basically invested my life and time in the right direction. Still love bicycles, still got to be around bicycle people, still got to do a lot with bikes, and continue to educate myself and others about cycling. And that was probably a very good decision. But yeah, if you get a chance, if there's any way you can get a study that you can get in on, I would encourage you, if you're near a university that is running studies on athletes or check in maybe with their departments, their athletic departments and their kinesiology departments, and then just find out if they're doing tests on this sort of thing. And oftentimes you can sign up for a test like this, and they will now, they actually will pay you to do it. And because they have to do the research, and they get students that are learning, and they're writing thesis on this and doing all sorts of other things. And so you if you get a chance, it's definitely worth looking into. Where can I get a free VO2 max test? That would be the first thing I would check into. Second thing you can check into, there are a number of coaches and bike fitters out there that will do it for you, but there will be a charge for that. And they will be able to give you a pretty accurate test as far as that goes. When I had my first test done, I was cycling and running both at the same time throughout the year, but was running more predominantly than I was cycling. So I was approached at a running race by a former bicycle racing friend who was getting her master's. And she came up to me after the race and said, "Oh my God, Ron, I didn't know you were a runner." And I said, "Well, I run too." And so she handed me a sheet and said, "Call me if you're interested." I read it through, called her the next day, and I was in. So the test may not be specifically for the VO2 max, it may be a part of the testing that they're doing in addition to. This was a test on runners who were running at the level of 20 miles a week, 40 miles a week, and 60 plus miles a week. And I won't get into the details of the test itself, but they guaranteed me a free VO2 max test, a nutrition test, and a body weight analysis and all sorts of other cool stuff that you could get done that, you know, you would normally have to pay a lot of money for. So again, I encourage you to shop around, so to speak. The second test I got done in Middletown at CCAP, and they are a coaching service. And so I did it there. And that was interesting because my VO2 max had dropped dramatically from the age of 34, 35, I think, when the first one was done. And I was in my late 50s when I did the second one. And that is not unusual. It is not unusual at all, but I was still above 50. So I was still like 51, 52, something like that. But you do lose it with age. You know, you're going to lose that ability to process oxygen. Why is it so important? Because the more oxygen you can process, the more efficient your machine, you, your body is. So it's kind of a cool thing. 165 millimeter crank arms are going to make you spin faster, are going to task your cardiovascular system a little bit more so than it would normally do, until you get adjusted to it, which is then, of course, hopefully going to improve your ability to process oxygen, because the VO2 can be changed. And as we lose it, as we get older, yeah, that's always going to be there. But if you can maintain it or maybe get a couple of points higher, it's all going to be great for you. And you're going to feel better and you're going to feel stronger when you're out there. So 165 millimeter crank arms sound like an interesting mechanical fix. And it's not using any kind of chemical or chemical dependency or anything else that may be deemed as illegal or, you know, against the rules of bicycle racing and or, you know, moral judgment. But it's definitely a thing that can help you. So I think that it's a good way to go. And I recently, over the last few years, I have increased my, or decreased, I'll call it, my gearing in the back. So I'm now riding on 32 and 34 tooth sprockets in the back, which give me a much lower gear and allow me to spin better going up the hills. I definitely feel better on the hills. I feel relatively strong in the hills, and I can't wait to get back at it because I have been off for about, I'm going to say, a year and a half to a year and three quarters from really being able to climb aggressively on my bike. And I want that back. I want at least a little bit of it back. I know I'm like 39 years old and with only 31 years worth of experience, and that these things do start dropping down over the years. But you know what? I'm always looking for the top secret answer. And I don't have the VO2 to cover it, so I got to do other things. So I'm going to try this and see what happens. Is it for you? That's your decision. You're going to have to look at that. If you've already started looking at the lower gears, a lot of the new bikes come with lower gears now. And if you've noticed a significant difference in your ability to climb over certain hills on your bike because of the lower gears, this might be something else to consider. It could probably help you out. There's a lot of information online. There's a lot of discussion out there about it and the difference. Some people don't notice any difference at all. Some people notice a lot of difference. You know, plug your numbers in and, you know, see where you're at and see what's going to work. That's basically all you can really do. This particular person here, I'm just kind of reading down these comments. They went from 175 to 165 recently and could not discern any increased difficulty in climbing his usual normal long steep fire road climb. In fact, he actually noticed that the speed improvement and the gain ratio change indicated he would that what he could see. He had a noticeable reduction in pedal strikes. Now, this is someone who's riding off-road, so if you're on a mountain bike or if you're on a gravel bike and ground clearance is an issue, a cross bike and ground clearance is an issue, guess what? Shorter crank arms give you more ground clearance because you're further away from the ground with the shorter arm. So someone made a Sheldon Brown reference here. This person said, I've not seen a Sheldon Brown link in many years. So apparently there's a link in here somewhere to Sheldon. That is another story for another show. I have a Sheldon Brown shirt that I sometimes will wear on my Bicycle Talk show, and sometimes you'll see me with it. He was the guru of all things mechanical back in the day, and Sheldon is no longer with us. He's riding his bicycle up in the clouds, and I hope he's having a tailwind every day, but he's no longer with us. But he worked at a bicycle shop in the Boston area, and he wrote a lot about, you know, the different things that he had noticed when he was working on mechanical things, what worked with one thing and what didn't work with another thing, derailleur changes, gear ratios, all sorts of stuff. Google him. His name is Sheldon Brown. All that information is still kept online. So I would definitely look him up because he was a fascinating guy. And if you're into old school bikes, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get a lot of information from that guy because he did a lot of that. So anyway, we'll scoot on the 165s. As I learn more, know more, I will send out more information to you guys and let you know what's going on, because the technology is, something's happening now. I have my skeptical friends out there who say, boy, they must have really perfected the drugs. Now, thank you, Lance, for turning us on to the fact that bicycle racers are all a bunch of dopers. They're not all a bunch of dopers, but he definitely disclosed a lot of information about the doping that he was doing once he finally got caught. And he got caught after suing numerous other cyclists who were accusing him of it, and he was denying it. And One of the most famous accusations was at Greg LeMond, who was another famous name in cycling over the years, one of our first American riders who was flat out, you know, adamant that Lance was doping. And guess what? He wasn't wrong. How about that? So, and then there were others that were hurt along the way. Floyd Landis was hurt along the way. Tyler Hamilton was hurt along the way. There were lots of lawsuits. Fortunately, they all came out on the positive side. But Lance still exists, and Lance still has podcasts and a bike show after the Tour de France every day because someone decided that he would be interesting to have up and online talking about the race that day. And I will admit that there are definitely some good points that are made by him and the people that he has on in discussion. But, anyway, I lost my faith. He brought bicycle racing to the United States as a look at this. Here's an interesting sport for you to watch, and did a really great job of that. But then when he ended up, you know, getting taken down the way he got taken down, I think he did a lot of damage too at the same time. So I'm not certain that the increase that he gained really was worthwhile to the decrease that he earned afterwards. So anyway, that's that. I'm on a tangent. I'm off course here. I got to keep going because there's more to talk about here today. And and we're going to get into the content here right away. I'm going to start real simple. We're going to go right to the bicycle industry. And when we go to the industry, we're going to talk about wheel brand Swiss Side sends an open letter to the UCI on new rim height rule. You know, the guys that tell you about the 6-inch socks, you know, got to have 6-inch socks. You better not have anything different than a 6-inch sock. You know, we're not going to make the course any safer, but you better have 6-inch socks. Yep, I did it again. I went off on another rant, but that's it. It happens. So they've released an open letter to the International Cycling Union, otherwise known as the UCI, objecting to recently announced rules that it would ban rims taller than 65 millimeters on UCI road races. Okay. Rule takes effect on January 1st, 2026. So why do I feel that this is something that the UCI is being smart about? Because, you know, I'm very critical of the UCI in some ways. I'll tell you what, the last time I crashed my bike, and it was a number of years ago, I was riding with a person who had a brand new pair of 150 millimeter carbon wheels, which were, you know, very nice. They were a birthday present and from her significant other, and, you know, they were very, very nice, but they're just not for everyone. And my main objection to them is the wind, the crosswinds. The crosswinds catch those things and they push you all over the road. If you do not have a level of experience that is required to handle a bicycle in that situation, you may have a big problem with them. And I watched this person launch from one side of the road all the way over into my lap, which was not a good place for her to be with her bicycle. And unfortunately, a decision was made by that rider to turn out of the situation, to turn away from it, which is the absolute wrong thing to do, especially if you're handlebar to handlebar with someone, because wherever they turn their bars, your bars go with them. And I went down real hard. Surprisingly, that rider rode out of it okay and didn't have the problem, but I slammed the pavement real hard. And that was my last really bad bike crash. It's been well over 10 years now. But I lost a lot of skin, and I think I lost the front wheel in the process too. It was pretty trashed out, and a little bit of dignity and a little bit of, ego was lost on that ride too. It was one of those crazy days that it was very, very hot and humid. And when it gets really hot and humid here, there are often times where there's a really strong wind coming out of the southwest that's pushing the humidity up from down south. And it was one of those days, and we were getting 20 to 30 mile an hour gusts. And 20 to 30 mile an hour gusts are one thing. They're hard enough to handle your bike in anyway. Add 50 millimeters of wheel, okay, of rim height to your wheel, and it's a full, the full circle of the wheel, and you are going to be fighting with that bike, let me tell you. And I don't like to fight with my bike because my bike always wins when I fight with my bike. So I really like to become one with my bike. I've never gone to deep dish aero rims. I've stayed away from them. I have certain reasons why, and you know, probably not all completely legit, but I'm not a big believer of it. So the rule would ban Swiss Side 68 millimeter tall Hadron Ultimate 680 wheel, which was launched on July 4th. Swiss Side said it's wind tunnel tested, on-road tested, and rider feedback found that its Hadron wheels are more stable in crosswinds than some wheels with rims that are 50 or 60 millimeters tall are currently being used in the UCI World events. I would like to see how they came to that conclusion, because that I'm not an engineer. I'm not a physicist. But I am a man that tends to believe in common sense, and that just doesn't make sense to me. All you engineers out there, if you're listening to the show, and I know engineers ride bikes because it just makes sense. I get it. I understand. I had so many customers in my store that were engineers. Engineers and bicycles are, they're kind of made for each other. The simplicity of the machine is a fascination to the engineer, and it's just, you know, it, well, we won't get into that. So I'm not sure how they came up with this conclusion. They're saying rim shape and depth are the parameters which enable turning the handling characteristics of the wheel. Deeper rims, apart from having more mechanical stability due to the increased rotational inertia, also allow for better tuning of the aerodynamic and handling characteristics of the wheel. A poorly engineered rim shape or the wrong combination of rim shape and tire can lead to very unstable, unpredictable, and potentially unsafe aerodynamic characteristic regardless of rim depth. That's what the letter reads from this company. The purpose here is to show the importance of an objective science-based approach, which needs to be a part of decision-making process for implementing equipment regulations. The recent proposed limitation on the rim depth to 65 millimeters for 2026 can be objectively shown with regards to the steering moment and the front wheel handling characteristics to be ineffective and even counterproductive, bringing any improvement in wheel stability and thereby rider safety. I'm not buying what they're selling. And I think that's what's going on here. They're selling something. I don't know what those wheels cost. I don't know what the background is on that. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Hey, Matthew, how are you? Nice to see you listening to the show. I am taking magnesium and calcium every day, and yeah, it is a really big help. The other thing that the magnesium does, by the way, someone just commented because he's been listening to the show and he sees where I'm going through here, is the magnesium also calms the nerves and it calms the muscles. And the calming effect that it has, there's even a product out, which I'm not supposed to mention on the show, but I'm going to call it out anyway. It's called Natural Calm. Kind of no-brainer, eh? It's magnesium. And what it does is it also keeps you from getting cramps in the middle of the night. So if you are one of those cyclists that gets out and you ride your bike hard and, you know, you try to hydrate as much as you can and you probably missed the boat on the hydration that day and didn't quite get enough fluids in, and now in the middle of the night you wake up and you're grabbing your hamstrings or you're grabbing your quads or your feet are cramping or whatever, which, by the way, I had all of those problems before the surgery on my neck and I have not had one cramp since. But I am taking magnesium still. So, and I found the best way to work with magnesium, not sure about calcium as much, but as far as the time of day goes, but magnesium I generally will take just before I go to bed at night. It's just become a habit now. And of course, when you live with a naturopathic physician, she's got all sorts of access to all sorts of really good quality magnesium. So it does help you sleep through the night because it calms you down. So it brings you back into your sleep stage a little bit better. And if you're not interrupted by muscle cramps, then it's a really good thing. And if you've had surgery that has involved them detaching and reattaching your muscles, let me tell you, you got some stuff going on back there. And it hurts a lot. So anything I could do to help relax the muscles, trying not to use the chemical dependency from the pharmaceuticals, which I did use for some time, and the muscle relaxers definitely were a help, but I didn't want to rely on them anymore. So I've been off of those for about a week now since my last show, and I still do magnesium every day. So it's good to know. One drawback to magnesium, just so you know, I'm giving you, once again, way too much information because I went way off track here with this comment, is that too much magnesium can lead to a digestive situation. And you will be digesting things a little bit more so than you want to. And I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to get into the specifics, but there is a fine edge as to how much is too much. And you'll learn. You'll learn. Maybe I only should have taken one capsule today instead of two. I even used to space them out. I'd take one in the morning, take one in the evening, so I, you know, have an even flow through the day. But anyway. You know, you can do whatever you want to do. I'm not endorsing anything in particular here, but the idea is good for sure. So the UCI and rim height. Yeah, you know, rim height, if you're riding in the time trial, I say keep your hands off of it. You know, I mean, time trial bikes are an entirely different situation. They are designed mainly for forward straight riding, and I see even some of these pros when they get into some of these big races and they have a real twisty turny time trial, they have a lot of trouble on those bikes. Those bikes are really, really difficult to ride. Throw a little crosswind in, and that tri bike, which is built entirely different than a road bike, becomes a menace on the road. But fortunately, they ride by themselves when they do time trials, so therefore it makes the situation a little bit safer. But I think that they will make you faster. I had a disc wheel years ago and it definitely was faster. There was no question about that. But anyway, we digress here. Let's go forward, get out of the wheel situation here, see what else I have on my list for today. And let's see, the industry. Yes, advocacy. People for Bikes kills dozens of harmful bike bills in a critical year for bike legislation. Yeah, if you're not paying attention to what's going on right now in the current political administration, you're really should pay a certain amount of attention to what's happening with transportation bills, because all of this bike legislation is being slashed, violently slashed. And that isn't good for us as cyclists. That isn't good for us as people who want to breathe clean air. That isn't good for us who like to stay fit and healthy. That isn't good for us who use a bicycle for transportation versus a motorized vehicle for transportation. Do I need to say more? This is a giant leap backwards. It's not a step backwards. This is a leap backwards. The previous administration had dumped a lot of money into this, and the Secretary of Transportation was Pete Buttigieg, and he did a great job of making this happen. He also visited over in Europe and saw what progressive nations were doing with transportation with bicycles, and this is not the good thing. So anyway, let's see what we got to say here. They tracked more than 800 bills nationwide, making 2025 the busiest year for bike-related legislation in history. Through targeted legal lobbying grassroots efforts, People for Bikes protected the bike industry from harmful proposals that would have disrupted the market and added costly new burdens to bike businesses. Every year, People for Bikes saves industry tens of millions of dollars by stopping legislation that threatens its collective successes. In 2025 alone, defeated bills would have banned electric bicycles from trail systems and public lands, would have mandated insurance, registration, or licensing for electric bicycle riders, imposed expensive, unnecessary battery labeling and certification rules. Hey, there's Fran. Look at that. Yeah, Fran, who is not here today, but she is here today because it looks like she just got home. from saving the world from sickness and misery, because, you know, she's our local naturopath here. So anyway, at the same time, People for Bikes championed legislation that opened more than 4,000 miles of trails to electric mountain bikes, unlocked hundreds of millions of state funding for trail development, expanded e-bike incentive programs to encourage new riders in new sales. The examples that I have down here below show how People for Bikes work to prevent costly market disruptions, protect millions in potential lost revenue, create new opportunities for future growth. So they did do a lot there. There's a lot of this has to do with e-bikes. E-bikes are here to stay, folks. If you're not a big e-bike fan, you need to ride a nice e-bike someday. Just tell me how you feel about it. Go grocery shopping on it. You know, put a trailer behind it and put 12 bags of groceries in that trailer and do it with an e-bike. You tell me, is the car really necessary, or is this a solution to a problem that has existed for years? And this is going to, you know, I got these guys that are friends of mine and go, well, it's cheating, you know, you're cheating. No, you're not cheating. You're remaining on your bicycle. You're still doing things on a bicycle. It is not cheating. It is not at all. And here's the big one. The big one is, and I've done previous shows on this, we've talked about it at length, and there have been surveys done where I had one show where I had a survey of 60 riders, 30 of them were given e-bikes, 30 of them were given regular bicycles, and over a period of time, they tested the fitness of these riders. All of them were at the same fitness level as they began, and at the end of the survey, the people who had the most increased fitness were the people who rode e-bikes, not regular bikes. Interesting, huh? So why is that? I'll tell you exactly why that is. Because when you ride the e-bike, next day you get up, you want to go ride it again. Because, hey, that was kind of fun. You know, hey, I got to go like 10 miles more than I ever would have gone. That was interesting. I got to actually go grocery shopping yesterday with my e-bike, and I had a rack on the back and panniers, and I could fill those up, and I didn't use my car all day. I am not critical of e-bikes. I think they're wonderful. There are a lot of certifications out here on battery costs and battery sizes and issues that have been worked on to try to make this a little bit safer for all of us out there on bicycles, if you've ever been, you know, buzzed by an e-bike while out for a bike ride. And tell me your favorite story if you have been buzzed by an e-bike while you're out on a bike ride, and how you took your macho body and show them a thing or two. I love those stories. I've got a couple of them, but anyway, it's, you know, you don't have to give up your bike, but you know, an e-bike is a nice extra little piece to have in your fleet. It's not a bad idea. There's a lot of licensing and registration rules that were changed because of People for Bikes, and that's been a good thing. There are some things going on with e-bikes, which, you know, the city bikes that are in New York City have been restricted to a 15 mile an hour top speed. That's a recent thing that's happened. So that's definitely something. I think that's a good thing, because I don't think you want to add a lot more speed to them. I think they should be required to do up to the speed limit. And if the speed limit in a city situation is 20 or 25 miles per hour, I've got no problem with an e-bike, because it's a lot safer to ride in traffic than it is to ride with traffic passing you all the time. And you'll live a lot longer, and you won't get hit as much. So and that goes back to an old thing that I heard many, many years ago, and I have promoted all the way. In order to ride in traffic, you have to become traffic. Think about that. The other thing that I push and promote in city type situations is that when you get on a bicycle and you're in a city situation, you're no longer riding your bicycle, you're driving your bicycle. So if you think about it from a motorized vehicle standpoint, there's way better communication with a motorized vehicle, and you'll be safer and you'll have less tendency to be run off the road if you can ride in traffic. But you also have to have the ability to keep up that kind of speed. The e-bike is the solution for that. So anyway, lots of good things here. And People for Bikes, they put a lot of research into what they do when they lobby on these things. And big shout out to People for Bikes, peopleforbikes.org, if you're looking to find them anywhere. I think that's a good thing. We got to move on, and I just wasted a whole ton of time here. I'm so sorry. Tour de France the last week. Oh my God, you've been watching this? Yeah, it looks like Tadej Pogačar is going to, he's on his way to win the Tour de France. There's no question about that. He is driven. He is powerful. And when they were in the last week that happened, you know, before the rest day, which was on Monday, it was in the Pyrenees, and the Pyrenees are really steep, and that's Tadej's best place to ride. His specialty tends to be on the shorter, steeper, or even the longer, steeper climbs. He likes those double digits, does really well on them. He performs really well on them. And then, you know, of course, we've had a few surprises along the way, too. But Jonas Vingegaard looked really tired in this last week. And I'm going to only tell you what I know towards the end of that last week. He started to look a lot less tired. Now, unfortunately, there is a 4-minute deficit on him. So that's going to be a really, really hard catch. They're in the Alps now, and going into the Alps today was Mount Ventoux. Once again, I'll talk about that next week because I'm jumping the gun here. But the Alps climbs tend to be longer, and they tend to be a little less steep. They still have their steep sections in them. There's no question about that. But they tend to be made more for that diesel motor type rider. And Jonas has a little bit more of that talent going on there. So those kind of climbs will take it out of you over time. And when they take it out of you over time, of course, you got to recover. And when you're riding 100 plus miles a day, it's really hard to recover. So it makes it very, very difficult. I'm just going to have to save all the Tour de France stuff for next week because, we're coming into the end here. It's been a great tour to watch. The uphill time trial was, as one of my friends said, stupid. It was really hard and it was nasty. And, that was a very much a huge adventure. So it's what it is. Anyway, we'll move on. We'll talk more. We'll talk a little bit more about it next week. Right now, I'd like to focus a little bit on our local bicycle tour that we have going on this weekend. And it's on Sunday, July 27th. And it is the 2025 Quiet Corner Bike Tour. And all rides start and end at Edward Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut. Talk about being in the middle of nowhere. Here we are. This is the Quiet Corner. It's what it all works out to be. Nice little park. It's got a great little pavilion that you can, eat under after the ride. There'll be support there also. There is a 102-mile century ride. It'll take you along through scenic turns at Devil's Hop Yard State Park and then turn north to explore more of the Quiet Corner with an opportunity for ice cream at We Like It Ice Cream. Yeah, We Like It Ice Cream is some serious, serious butterfat, folks. Serious butterfat. So if you are able to tolerate dairy, it is a great rest stop. And that comes towards the very end before you get back. There was a climb on that ride which has been taken out if you've done it in previous years. There was just this one climb that was too close to the end of the ride and went into double digits at just the wrong time. And so there has been an elimination of that. And it's been, if I can only say, it's very hard to say flattened out up here in northeastern Connecticut because there's nothing flat up here. But it has helped out a little bit. So that's a good one. If you go onto their website, you will find the Ride with GPS files there and you can check it out. There's also a 64-mile ride which heads out the same way as the longer routes. And it takes a turn out in Colchester to link up again and return back into Chaplin. You will visit three of the rest stops using the longer routes. And there's also a Ride with GPS there. The 40-miler is 41 miles, and it heads out to our rest stop down in Baltic, which is south of us, where it joins other routes and returns back to the park. The rest stops in this routes are two of them, and I may be at the second one helping out this year. I'm not sure exactly where they're going to put me. They got to put me somewhere where I don't have to do much because I got this thing, you know. But anyway, the 20-mile ride will be the shortest ride and it heads out and returns on the same roads as our longer rides. And there's also an 18-mile gravel loop, which uses about 8 miles of the airline trail with one rest stop. And there is also a 34-mile gravel loop. This is a new gravel road option for this year with a rest stop at We Like It Ice Cream for, you know, the rest stop, which is, hey, there's a bonus. Maybe the 34-mile gravel ride is the ride to do this weekend. Sounds nice, huh? Foods, rest stops, and support. There's going to be portable chemical toilets at all rest stops. We pride ourselves in our overstocked rest stops and abundant food after the ride. All ride lengths have stops that are stocked with plenty of packaged sweet and salty choices, home-baked goods, fruit and water. When you return to the park, we have a variety of offerings to make a fresh sandwich and some salads and chips and fruits before you head home, all included in the price of the ride. You won't go home hungry, that's for sure. And on-call support is provided for anyone needing transport back. We have SAG vehicles, and we can help you out there. That's normally my job. I'm usually one of the SAGs, mechanical SAG and SAG, but I am not allowed to drive with a cervical brace on my neck. So that takes that out. Not only am I not allowed to drive with it, it is illegal to drive with it. So we are going to be at the Quiet Corner Bike Tour this weekend, and we even have a new member offer. If you join the Thread City Cyclers, you can get a half price deal. But I'm not putting any numbers out here because we aren't allowed to do that on public radio. So there is an online registration on BikeReg, so check it out. It's bikereg.com/quiet-corner-bike-tour. So day event registration opens at 7 a.m. and we're going to start riders out between 7:30 and 8 a.m. on the long rides, and then 8 and 9 a.m. on the shorter rides. And so all riders should be on the road and finished by 4 p.m. So anyway, come join us for the Thread City Cyclers Quiet Corner Bike Tour. Every time we get more people there, they all say how much fun it is and what a great little ride it is. So anyway, we got to finish up. We are done. So that I talked about Sunday, July 27th, 2025. That's an event, Quiet Corner Bike Tour. Also Sunday, September 21st, 9th annual Southbridge Credit Union Tour Apakum, bike ride for land conservation. And you'll be seeing some of the beautiful rural roads through Brimfield, Sturbridge, Monson, and surrounding towns, and checking out some of the land trusts that are out there. Really, really beautiful. Eurobike was this week, so that's it. This is it. It's finishing points time. It's the Tour de France. Yeah, you enjoying the Tour de France? I am. I'm having a great time. It's really fun. You know, some people are popping out of the woodwork, which had not been expected, which is really cool. There are some surprise stage winners. If you just check out highlights. If you go to YouTube, you can check out the highlights. If you don't have the channel that is ready for it, here we go. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. I want you to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, price of gas, lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. And hey, take the pedaling around challenge. Park that motor vehicle for a day and take your bike out instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. Twice now for me. Twice. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!